didn't forget to put my clip on. Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Garrison. I'm an alcoholic. And it's through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982. And that doesn't make me a miracle. It makes Alcoholics Anonymous a miracle. And if you're new in this room today, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I always call it God's Magnificent AA, the program that saved my life. And it's going to save yours, too, if you want to take a few quick actions. And I suggest strongly that you get a sponsor today, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get busy and do everybody else is doing around here. And you're going to stay sober as I've stayed sober for 16 years. And people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. My home group is the Pacific Group in West L.A., a group I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And I guess if you're not proud, you ought to get a job, but you might change your mind. I certainly have a job in mind on Wednesday night, and I'm proud to have that job. I want to thank Kirk and the committee for inviting me. This is an honor and a privilege. It's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And I think that it shows, and I make an awful lot of mistakes, and I do an awful lot of things wrong. But I'll tell you one thing, that I love you. Make no mistake about that. You know, I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I ever opened my big mouth. And one thing is to talk to my sponsor, and Clancy sends you his love and very best wishes. And if anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I did not get sober in California. I got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska. It was just a, well, it's just a goddamn terrible place to get sober, if you want to know the truth. I wasn't doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous in Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud as I stand here today. And thank God for the old-timers in AA, because somebody loved me enough to get my current sponsor. And I can tell you that my life has done nothing but totally, completely turn around as a result of that. And I absolutely adore the ground that man walks on. And I talked to him before I left to L.A., and he said, well, get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They got it. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And talk directly to those new people with the life and blood of AA. And I believe it as I stand here today, and I welcome you, and I hope that you stay. And then I think I did, without a doubt, the most important thing I can ever do, and that's to say, God, please let me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life today, you guys. It did not used to be that way for me, I can guarantee you. You know, I want to thank Mary for being such a lovely hostess and stuff, and I got off the airplane on Friday night, and I, too, had airplane problems and stuff, but anyway, she had three delightful young ladies with her and stuff, and we just had a ball on the way. I'd have drank with you guys. Trust me, I'd have drank with you. And I'm sure that Mary and I probably could have stole drugs together, too, but anyway. Thank all of them. They're just delightful people and stuff. And, you know, hasn't this committee done a great job, you guys? They really have. You know, I just had a wonderful weekend here this weekend and stuff. But I got to fly back to L.A. and get off the plane and go to work for 12 hours. But, you know, that's fine. You know, I just love doing this kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm going to tell you guys something if you're new here. You have no idea what you walked into. This is the most precious thing in my life, I got to tell you. My life literally revolves around it and stuff. But, you know, I was telling the girls on the way over to the hotel, I have had so many funny stories happen to me since I've been sober and traveling and stuff. But, you know, I got invited to go speak in Waco, Texas, wacky Waco, and for this conference. And they sent this kid up to get me up in Dallas and stuff, and we were putting my luggage in the trunk of his car, and I said, there's no plates on this car. I mean, I didn't say that, but I noticed there's no plates on this car, and I thought, but he was a newcomer, 2 weeks sober, and I thought, just leave it be, you know. I used to do stuff like that when I was brand new sober, let me tell you. But anyway, no way we're going to get to Waco without getting stopped, and sure enough, we did, right between, about halfway point between Waco and Dallas, and the cop said, and who are you? And I said, well, he picked me up to go speak at a conference in Waco. And they said, this kid's under arrest for driving on a suspended license. We're impounding his car. And, you know, what are you going to do? And I thought, what am I going to do? You're going to put a defenseless woman out on the highway? Defenseless woman. They had no idea who they were dealing with. But anyway, they said, lady, we can't take you with us. And I thought, what am I going to do? And for the first time in the history of me traveling, I left all my information at home. I had no information, the chairman's name, or I had his name, but I didn't know the phone number. And they wouldn't let me talk to this kid in the car. They said, don't talk to him. And I said, well, can't I just at least ride to the police station with you and make a phone call? And they said, oh, they suppose so. So we went to this way station. It wasn't even like a jail. And anyway, they arrested this kid for all these charges and stuff. And I thought, you know, I don't really want to call my sponsor and discuss this. What am I going to do? And I couldn't come up with anything, you guys. And so anyway, I had to call Clancy, and he said, what? You know? And so anyway, he got some guy from Dallas come down and get me, and they took me over to Waco and stuff. But I felt so sorry for this kid, I could have just cried for him. He said, I'm so sorry, Karen. I said, it's all right, don't worry about it. It'll make a funny story someday in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, you know. But So we got a bunch of money together and bailed him out of jail and stuff. His sponsor wasn't too happy with me that weekend, but I know what it's like to be new and get in trouble with the law, I got to tell you. But anyway, you know, like I said earlier, my sobriety is May 30th, 1982. It was not always my sobriety date. When I got my current sponsor, I had to change that date, and there's a reason for that. I'm one of these people who had to go and smoke dope when I got sober. And, you know, if you're smoking marijuana this room day, you are not sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I will tell you right this minute. By God, if I have to change my date, then so do you. But anyway, you know, I got my current sponsor, and I tried to explain to him that where I'm from in Lincoln, Nebraska, the particular group I was going to, you can have two sobriety dates, one from alcohol and one from drugs. He pointed out to me that I was in Southern California. We have one date to get my date changed, and I was just smart aleck when I got my current sponsor, and I said, where does the book mention pot? He said, well, the book does mention pot, and I said, Clancy, I have read that book. It does not talk about marijuana in that book, and he said, if I find the word pot in that book, you change your sobriety and never argue with me again, and I knew I was making a bad deal, you guys, but I did it anyway. And I'll be damned if he didn't flip open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. On the first page of Bill Wilson's story, it says, died by musket or by pot. And I said, that is not what that means. He said, I don't give a damn what it means. You said the book didn't mention pot. It does mention pot. Change your sobriety date. And my life has flourished, I got to tell you guys. But this clip makes me so nervous. I'm afraid I'm going to do something with it. You know, bad things happen to me behind podiums, I got to tell you guys. I was on the East Coast about a year and a half ago giving a talk, and right in the middle of my talk, my skirt fell off in front of 3,000 people. And had this glass podium where you could actually see the speaker and stuff, and that makes me nervous enough. But anyway, I had this wraparound black skirt on. The button came undone, and I thought, my God, my skirt's going to fall on the floor, and by God, it did. But you know what? Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to wear underwear, and thank God I had some on, I'll tell you. It's also taught me to take action. I just picked up that skirt and kept right on talking. What else are you going to do? But anyway, I'm so delighted to see my AA brother here this weekend, Dick Martin. I absolutely adore this man. We share the same sponsor. And, you know, I don't share very well, I got to tell you guys. But I've known Dick for many, many years. Him and his wife have been so instrumental in my sobriety, I cannot begin to tell you. And when I got Clancy for sponsor, he sent me up to Omaha, Nebraska, to be part of that group on Tuesday night. And, you know, I'd seen Peggy and Dick around, and they were both real, real active and stuff. They were doing things I was not doing. And they intimidated me, if you want to know the truth. And I told my sponsor, I'm not going up there. I don't like those people. He said, I don't give a damn whether you like or not. Call him on the telephone and ask him if he can come up and be part of that group. And I thought, God, you know, but I did it, you know. And Dick answered the phone, and I said, you know, I really don't like you. I'm only doing this because my sponsor told me to do it. And you know what they said to me? I couldn't. My heart was so warmed, I can't begin to tell you. They said, why don't you come up and have dinner with us and go to the meeting with us? And I thought, Jesus, how can you not like people like that? You know, it's impossible and stuff. I was so ornery when I got sober, I can't begin to tell you and stuff. And things have changed a lot in my life, but I love you dearly, and you know that and stuff. And but anyway, you guys, I'm so delighted to be here this morning and be sober and stuff. I'm going to be 17 years sober next Sunday, and, you know, I'm just so excited about it and stuff. And, you know, the longer I stay sober, the more excited I get about Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never lost that enthusiasm. I don't know why. I just never have. And some people get so jaded with this sometimes, and I have to believe this because they're not active members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I sponsor a lot of women in AA, and I have a lot of commitments in this program. It's not about just speaking, I got to tell you. I am busy. This is just one thing I do and stuff. But, you know, if you're new here today, God, I hope that you stay and get a sponsor that's going to make you do the deal here. You know, it's the key to my sobriety. I really believe that. But you guys, you know, if you're worried about becoming a saint in Alcoholics Anonymous, don't worry about it. It ain't going to happen, let me tell you. And, you know, I went to Mardi Gras about 2 years ago in February, and I'm up here to tell you that you can go to Mardi Gras and stay sober, I got to tell you. Not too many sober people were there, but by God, we were sober. And I was with some of the women I sponsor and so forth, and we were standing on the corner of Canal Street and Bourbon Street waiting for the parade to begin. And, you know, it's like beads mania at Mardi Gras. They throw beads off all the floats and stuff, and everybody tries to grab them. Everybody's drunk and stepping all over you and stuff. It's really very dangerous, if you want to know the truth. But, you know, I'm a greedy individual. I came in with 400 strands of beads with no problem whatsoever. But it's a custom at Mardi Gras for a woman to get white beads. You have to bare your breast. And I want you all to know I did not do that. If I've been drinking, I've been the first one with my dress off, I got to tell you. But anyway, we're standing there waiting for the parade to begin. These two little guys walked up to us, and there's a devil that makes me do stuff, you guys, I cannot believe. And this little kid, and it was obvious they were both plastered, you know. And he said, can we have your pretty turquoise beads? And I said, well, what are you going to do for them, you know? And I thought, now, why did I say that? They're going to do something bad. And sure enough, they did. And anyway, he said, lady, I'll do anything that you ask. Damascus, you know. I said, oh, really? Okay, fine. You can both pull down your pants and you both have to sing, I'm a little teapot, short and stout. And they did it, you guys. I couldn't believe it, you know. I had to cover up my baby's eyes, but by God, their sponsor looked, let me tell you. But anyway, this ain't about becoming good here, let me tell you guys. But, you know, the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash. I had an alcoholic hepatitis. I had a liver cirrhosis. I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want to know this, because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you it's not one of your finer wines, I can assure you. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. And I literally could not believe what's going on in my life. I'd lost my children, I'd lost my husband twice, I'd lost every friend I'd ever had and stuff. And then I lost the one thing that brought my knees in this disease. I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. It absolutely devastated me, it did not stop me from drinking. And there's a reason for that, and it's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I'll learn to control and enjoy my drinking. The persistent illusion is astonishing, just like our book talks about. Many of us pursue it in the gates of insanity and death. And I'll guarantee you one thing. I was in the gates of insanity. I got sober and almost into my coffin. And I cannot begin to tell you how grateful I am to stand here 16 years sober, because I really should be dead, as you're soon going to hear about and stuff. But you guys, I come from a wonderful home there in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I want you to know that. My mother wanted you to know it too, I'll guarantee you that. You know, my mom died 6 years ago, and I miss my mom so much I cannot begin to tell you. And my mom was always so proud her daughter was, you know, sober and alcoholic Thomas when she died. Although she did not believe I was an alcoholic the day she died, if you want to know the truth. She said I was having a few problems, and I sure as hell was, I can tell you that. But she loved you, let me tell you. And, you know, I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's neither here nor there. I don't do well with people that send AA podiums and blame anybody for anything. And my father died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force dies on Skid Row. I don't know how that happened, other than the fact that he was an alcoholic. And whether he ever found AA or not, I do not know. I just know that he certainly did not stay sober as a result of it. And, you know, one more time, this is a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. This is not a game I'm playing it for. This is serious business. And I would give in the world if my father were alive today, because we would have a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Rah-Rah in high school and homecoming queen and cheerleader and all that kind of stuff, and made straight A's and never cracked a book, and I made straight F's and never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And she was a model for many, many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, and retired, and now she's teaching school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you guys, this is a direct result of this program. I love my sister very, very much today, and I recently found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who's a pilot in the Navy in Spain who got home from Operation Desert Storm a couple years ago. As a matter of fact, 4 months ago, my brother was over Iraq. He's a fighter pilot and stuff, and I used to think my brother was such a dork when we were growing up. I can't begin to tell you. He used to embarrass me, if you want to know the truth. Never uses drugs, doesn't drink, doesn't screw around. I thought, what an embarrassment to me. But I'll tell you something. As I stand here this morning, I am so proud of my brother, I can't begin to tell you. You wouldn't catch me over Iraq in any fighter plane, I got to tell you. But anyway, neither one of these people are alcoholic. And I have another sister who's married the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of a lot of trouble when I got sober, let me tell you. And I'm welcome in their home state, I never used to be. I have 2 beautiful kids that are 38 and 39 years old. And you guys, both my kids are out there using drugs and drinking and stuff. And let me tell you what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've also learned this from women in AA and Al-Anon and men, too, as a matter of fact. But I've learned I am the last person in the world that can help those kids. I'm just being an example to them and keep my mouth shut, and that's what I try and do. It is without a doubt the single hardest thing I've ever done in my sobriety, let me tell you. But I'm keeping my mouth shut, and everything's going well and stuff. But anyway, they're both alive, they're both working, they're both paying their bills. But by God, they're out there big time. It's just a matter of time, and we all know that, let me tell you. But they have given me 5 of the most gorgeous grandkids you've ever seen before in your life. And, you know, I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 3 years ago, and I got to name that 5th grandbaby, and I named her Hannah Rose. It's an old family name and stuff. And I'll guarantee you one thing. Nobody was asking to name grandbaby 16 years ago. There wasn't any grandbaby 16 years ago, but I would have been asked to name them, I can assure you. And things with my family are very, very good today. It's only a direct result of this program, I can assure you. And it took a long time for it to happen. And in my case, that's a good thing, I got to tell you guys. You know, when I was growing up in Nebraska, I was just a disruptive jerk is what I was. Always in trouble. Always kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I really hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I hear that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%, I got to tell you. You know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys. But I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one. And I hope it was my last one. But I remember what alcohol did for me from the very beginning. It made me feel like I belonged, and I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank at any given opportunity after that, and I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm in the need of Alcoholics Anonymous this morning, and I honor this podium by talking about alcoholism up here. I used a lot of drugs, too. Made that a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. And, you know, when I was growing up in Nebraska, there just wasn't a lot of drugs on the street. But I'll guarantee you, I found every single one of those drugs. And, you know, there was some marijuana and speed and stuff. And today, if you get caught for possession of marijuana, you get a ticket. Big deal. When I was growing up, you went to prison is what happened to you. And that didn't scare me. Nothing scared me. I think I wasn't supposed to be doing. I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth in here. If you pat me on the head, my pants fall off is what happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name about it, and I love it about them. They've been the downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men. There's a room for them here today. I can just feel it, you know. That's one thing I love about Southern California, girls. It's got so many sick men, I'm just entertained around the clock 24 hours a day. You know, I'm getting the age now where silver-haired men are starting to become very attracted to me, which opens up a whole new ball game, I got to tell you. You know, those young ones are nice girls, but sooner you got to talk to them, and they ain't got nothing to say I want to hear. And I'm sure I have nothing to say they want to hear either, but I have to tell you guys a funny story. I was on the in Nashville, Tennessee, probably about 6 years ago, giving a talk, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, Tennessee, AA, walked up to me afterwards, I want you to know, and this woman said to me, she said, "You're disgusting." And she wasn't kidding you guys. She meant every word of it. And I said, "Lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I can assure you." And furthermore, if I wanted you to sponsor me, I'd flown to Nashville and asked you. You know, I hear some women get this podium, and I wonder if they ever drank. I really do. Do all their drinking in one room and shoot through the keyhole with an eyedropper. I was out there big time. I got myself into a lot of trouble. I've been taught to share that freely in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I offend anybody in this room today, I would never offend anybody in the program that saved my life, I got to tell you. And besides that, my book tells me, and this is my favorite part of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, "Cling to the thought that in God's hands your dark past will be the greatest possession that you have." And it goes on to say, "Because you can literally divert death and misery for others." And I found it to be very, very true in my sobriety. So if I offend anybody here today, I don't want to hear about it afterwards either. But anyway, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old, and I had to get married. And as it must be, I married an alcoholic. Don't most alcoholic women? I go for colorful, exciting men that beat the hell of me and all kinds of stuff. And he wasn't even a man, you guys. He was only 17 years old, and I was 16. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew it, we had two babies to take care of. And I found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis, and used to come home and beat me up on a daily basis. And I had never seen a man hit a woman before in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee you one thing. If my dad would have laid one hand on my mom, she'd have knocked him from here to the moon, I got to tell you. And I grew to hate this guy very, very much. And I'm not blaming him for my disease, so please don't get me wrong. It's just part of my story, and I need to share it. And somebody in that family had to get a job. And I didn't finish junior high yet, for Christ's sakes. And I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Lincoln. And the magic was put in my life. I literally fell in love with nursing. And I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school. I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I would love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower. And I'm here to tell you today from this podium that that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have any willpower as far as my disease goes. But when I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years, and I worked full-time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and that is hard stuff to do. I did not drink, not use any drugs during this period of time. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand here this morning and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and they told me, "You are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, you are no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license." If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession, and I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people people that I take care of, nor the people that I work with in ordinary circumstances. And what I had to tell you today is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism, for Christ's sakes. I don't know anything about social drinking. I drank, ran with alcoholics, and we do indeed die from this. And at the age of 27 years old, I went to work in surgery at a hospital there in Lincoln. I had that job for 19 years. I love working in the operating room. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position. I drank, ran around with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard and they played hard. And I need to tell you guys that the instance of alcoholism amongst my profession is tremendously high. And that'll do a lot for your security level if you're going to have surgery next week. It has to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, this is clearly that we're to tell in a general way what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick what my drinking was like. I can tell you guys about my drinking about 5 seconds, flat, if you know the truth. Many, many years ago, I was at a concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. And that's exactly what my drinking was like. It was all about Woodstock. That Woodstock they had 3 summers ago was a piece of crap compared to the one I went to. There will never be another Woodstock, trust me on that. The kids from the 60s threw a party that nobody will ever match, I am quite sure. And, you know, New York got wind they're going to have this big event. And they told these people, if you don't get medical coverage, you're not going to have this concert. So they started hiring people from the Midwest because they thought it would be more responsible. And we were a seedy lot, I can assure you. And I was the first alcoholic to sign up for this deal. And find 9 girls I work and drank with to join me. And we made about 80 residents from the East Coast, and then we were at Woodstock. I've never seen so much alcohol in one place in my entire life. You could have floated a battleship out of it, no problem whatsoever. And the drugs, it was like a candy store. And everybody was sharing, we were sharing narcotics right along with everybody else. And on that back lot of Woodstock, we had a hospital parked back there, a little semi, and I don't recall being in that semi the entire week, but I do recall what it was like to stand from the stage tonight that Richie Havens sang Freedom, and Joe Cocker and Country Joe and Santana, those groups that I love. I come from the roaring 60s, you guys, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you, and things have not changed in my life in a little tiny bit. I loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin have been a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I'd have traded Janis for Clancy any day of the week if you wanted the proof. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't trade my sponsor for anybody, and I really mean that. Please don't tell him I said that, okay? But anyway, you know, drinking for me at one time was a fun thing, you guys. It'd be a lie for me to stand as anything but that. But I cannot remember the fun, I remember the pain that it caused me. It almost cost my life and stuff. I'm going to give you a couple quick drinking stories and get my recovery here. You know, I love the horse races, too. I love everything I'm supposed to be doing. I've been to the horse races in Omaha, Nebraska, with a couple of nurses that I worked with, and the girls told me, they said, Karen, the horse race has been over with for 3 hours. We're all drunk. Let's go back to Lincoln. And I said, well, run along. I'd met 2 guys from Council Bluffs, Iowa, and these guys wanted to take me to a party, and by God, I was going. Like I said, you pat me on the head, and I'll follow you anywhere you want to go. And I really can't tell you much about this party, you know, the guys that I was with. I just know that I woke up out of a blackout on Highway 2 by Palmyra, Nebraska, a little town of about 200 people. And I found out something very interesting about Palmyra, Nebraska, that they take a dim view of naked women walking on their highways. I found that out. And there I was at 2 o'clock in the morning, walking stark naked down the highway, and my high heels carrying my purse. And it was February in Nebraska, and it's a tad bit nippy out there in February in Nebraska to be doing that. This morning I know why ducks' feathers freeze, I can assure you. And of all the luck, the first person I ran into was a highway patrolman. And, you know, in Nebraska, the cops travel themselves. They don't have a partner. And out where I live in California, they have about 4 cops in 1 car, let me tell you. But anyway, this guy stops his squad car, and turns on his siren, he rolls down his window, and he says, what are you doing? And I thought, well, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard anybody say. It's quite obvious what I was doing. He said, lady, you get in this squad car, and you sit down, and don't you touch me. Well, you know, one thing about a person like myself, every time I'm in trouble, I'll do one thing more to make it worse every single time. And I looked at this cop, and I said, I'm not getting your squad car because you might try and rape me. He said, lady, I wouldn't bet any money on it. You are absolutely disgusting is what you are. And I'm here to tell you guys that that made me madder. And it was going on to show you how sick I was. And He had to get a matron out from the Palmyra, Nebraska City Jail to come up there and get me. And that woman was not pleased, I will guarantee you. They were very busy at that downtown jail. Not have time for this foolishness. And I went downtown, booked in that cop's raincoat. You know, cops keep raincoats in the trunks of their car for these occasions. And I went downtown, booked for indecent exposure, for assault and battery, for kicking in his windshield, for hitting her, for hitting him. All the delights, little antics that we pull as practicing alcoholics. And I will never forget how humiliating it was to be in that courtroom the very next morning, standing in my raincoat, when my brother-in-law, the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, came walking up to me, and I didn't know he was working there that day, and he said, "Karen, have you lost your marbles or what? Why would you do something like this?" And you guys, I looked at my brother-in-law, and I was to say this to many people in my drinking career in many, many courtrooms. I said, "Oh, for Christ's sakes, Dennis, this could happen to anybody, you know." And I, honest to God, believe that, you guys, I really did. And you know, but and that cost me about $3,000 to get out of that, and I just shirked it off like it was no big deal. But the one thing that I learned, and this is all that I learned, don't ever drink with men from Council Bluffs, Iowa, and I kept right on drinking. I will never forget what it felt like to wake up in the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, in their emergency room, one more time coming out of a blackout, one more time I'd been the horse races. You know, for a number of years I thought the horse races were my problem. It certainly was not my drinking, and I'm one of these alcoholic females with a big mouth when I drink, and I have a big mouth in sobriety, but I can tell you that pain is a teacher here. It's getting a lot better. And I'd smashed some guy at that horse race track, and he belted me right in the teeth is what he did. And a plastic surgeon was putting 18 stitches in my mouth. And I'll never forget what this doctor said to me, you guys, as long as I live, I'll never forget this. He said, "Karen, we love you so much. What is wrong with you? You are such a good nurse and stuff. You know, we think you're an alcoholic. Let's send you to a treatment center and get this drinking problem taken care of so you can get on with your life here." And you guys, I could not believe the audacity that man had that he would say that to me. And I said, "Just fix my lip and get out of my face. I'll drink if I want to drink." And that's exactly what I did. And the drunk driving charges and the bad checks, all the stuff that we eventually do. My kids were in trouble. I never could marry these guys I was engaged to. They kept dying from alcoholism. And I thought to myself, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. Besides, I need to get even with him for all the things he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again. I'm certainly not proud of it as I stand here this morning. You know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice, you know. But anyway, sorry, but that's the way I feel. And I danced that man through three of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And I love to tell you guys this story, but ready to tell you. And my sponsor always tells me that is not funny, and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. And I said, "Okay, fine, then I won't tell it anymore." And he said, "No, go ahead and tell it so people see how sick you really were, and apparently how sick you really still are. And I'm so sick, and I still think it's funny, and I'm telling the story." When I married him again, I told him, I said, "If you ever hit me again, buddy, I'll kill you next time you hit me." And he said, "I'll never hit you again ever." And I said, "You better see that you don't." And he lied is what he did. And he came home drunk one night. And I happened to be sober this night for some reason. And I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk. They want to take you to bed and stuff. And I was not buying it. If there's anything I can't stand, it's some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. I will say that when the shoe's under the foot, though, it's fine with me. And that guy came home and indicated that to me. And I said, "You get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period." And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, if you want to know the truth. And I told him, I said, "You go to sleep on that couch, and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born." And he sat up for hours, you guys, his eyes pried open. And as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis. And this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I can assure you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the story unless I tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. And I thought, "You disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach." And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse. But anyway, I thought to myself, "What can I do to get even with this guy for all the things that he's done to me?" And I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. That's one thing we should never do, folks, is drink and think at the same time. And this was many, many years ago, you guys, when super glue first came out. And super glue was powerful stuff. You know, Mrs. Bobbitt has nothing on me, I can assure you. I was a foreigner before she ever got started. And I got that super glue out, and I read the directions on that super glue. And like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 5 minutes, is what it said. And I went over to this man, and I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not, I get so excited when I tell this story, I can just do it all over again. There was not one place this man did not have super glue, and I laughed about it, and I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe. And, you know, I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true. But I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can assure you. And, you know, we had a telephone bar. And he called the police and the cops right in front of her home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And, you know, one thing you got to keep in mind here, they did not see things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. In California, it wouldn't surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which let me, the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at those cops and I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands, for Christ's sakes. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you cannot arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later, I got out of jail. I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did. And they took me to jail, I might add, and it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get two surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, yeah, there's a paper in about that at Creighton, and anybody in this room's thinking, anybody in this room's thinking about going to medical school there, you can read about it if you want to. I'd always want a paper written about me, but not like this, I got to tell you. And I thought to myself, I'm getting out of this marriage because this guy comes home from the hospital, he's going to glue something to mine shut. And he would have, too, I got to tell you guys. And, you know, that happened to a lady in Kentucky about a year and a half ago. I was on the Santa Monica Freeway driving home from work. I had a wreck when I heard it. I thought, my God, better her than me, I got to tell you. But anyway, I divorced that man one more time. And I will tell you guys on the brighter side of things here today that Alcoholics Anonymous really does work, because we have an amends step in this program, and my sponsor made me get on an airplane and fly to Sacramento, California, and make amends to my ex-husband where he currently lives and stuff. And I tried to tell my sponsor, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I don't have to make the amends. He said, you get on that plane and get there and do what I'm asking you to do, and maybe one of these days you will be sorry. And I only tell anybody in this room today, when that guy sees me, he kind of backs up, I got to tell you. But we were able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to him. And I will tell you guys, I walked away from that man. I was free of what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I will tell you, the promises in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous started coming true in my life when I made those amends. So I know this thing works. You just got to do it for it to work. At this time in my life, I got involved with the most bizarre man I've ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Nebraska is in the mafia, for Christ's sakes. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was your typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was taking Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. It was beginning to be no more fun, I got to tell you guys. You know, I'm a nurse, and I've studied alcoholism. And I knew all about it before I became one. And it shows me one more time today what our book says is true. Self-knowledge avails us nothing with this disease. It's action that counts. Nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous do we have a chapter called End of Thinking. But we do have one that's called End of Action. And that's the only reason I'm standing here 16 years sober, I got to tell you. And the day came to the hospital, told me, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you. We cannot read about our nursing staff in the paper anymore. Glue and husbands, drunk driving charges, bad checks, all the stuff that you're doing. Everything you do in Lincoln's in the paper, I'm sorry to say. And they knew my game, let me tell you. And they said, you're either going to a treatment center, you longer had this job. Well, you guys, you know what? You don't tell people like me that stuff. And I said, you and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of a job that I love more than the whole world, and I cannot say it enough today. And I drank and I drank and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work at a nursing home there in Lincoln, and what I'm about ready to share with you guys is something I'm not proud to discuss from any AA podium. It took me years into my sobriety before I would ever mention this. I found myself still in drugs from that nursing home. I was still in morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium, and I'd get my damn hands on. And if you think I'm proud of that, that, you are sadly mistaken. And the day came, the people that ran that place came up to me, and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You are just weird is what you are. You know, you're a good nurse, and you take good care of the patients, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange, too, if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange, too. And I threw my narcotic keys at them, and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital here in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that interview. I got that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level of alcohol in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly. And I was in hot water up to my yin-yang, let me tell you. I had to drink, and I had to take drugs, and I had no more choice than any of it. And I will tell you guys right up front here this morning, the very thought that I might drink again makes the hair on my neck stand straight up. And that's why I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never want to have to go to that stuff again, let me tell you. But anyway, I kept that job for a short amount of time, doing the same things I was doing at that nursing home, justifying in my head, I don't mean to do this, I'm not a bad person, I'm never going to do it again. We all know if that ever happens for us, we just jump from the fat to the fire here. And the day came when I got caught red-handed, stole some morphine from that hospital, and this has got to be, without a doubt, the most humiliating day of my entire life. When they said, you give us your narcotic keys, and you get out of this hospital, don't you ever walk back in here again, we're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing Nebraska. That's exactly what they did, that's exactly what they should have done. My other two jobs should have done too, as a matter of fact. And to make a long story short here today, I lost my nursing license. And to make a long story short and short from here today, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I've traveled the Midwest, I've prostituted myself, and I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or do. And I'm still so sick in the head sometimes, I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again, you know. It shows me how ill I still am. But anyway, my sponsor assures me I'm still a very ill person now, because I sometimes be thinking that kind of garbage. But anyway, you know, 2 years went by for me, and there I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And I certainly had better things intended for myself than to be doing that, I got to tell you. I will never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live, and I hope to God it was the last day of my drinking, but I really can't tell you that much about it if you want to know the truth. I apparently was so physically sick I just passed down the streets is what happened to me. But anyway, before that happened, I remember thinking to myself, there was a Hilton Hotel adjacent to that Skid Row area. I remember thinking 2 years ago, I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those folks felt the same way when they arrived there. But anyway, I woke up in an intensive care ward at the very hospital I was born at, the very hospital that I worked at for 19 years. And I will tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. You know, I'm not a very big person. I only weighed 95 pounds the day I got sober. And I was coming off a quarter whatever a day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day. That's a lot of booze. That's a lot of pills. And I had a lot of dying, let me tell you. You know, they said that most alcohol withdrawal is over with in 3 days. And perhaps it is for some people. It certainly was not for me. It was going to be a long, long time before I was going to start feeling better. I laid in that intensive care ward. I had tubes come out of my belly. They were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs going. And I found myself in withdrawal that was so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I laid in that intensive care ward and I shook and I shook and I died for one solid month. And I'd scream at those nurses and say, you get me some Librium, you get me some Valium, you get me something. This is absolutely inhumane that anybody should have this kind of withdrawal. And they said, Karen, listen to us. You need to fill every one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. And I did not want to hear that, let me tell you. And they went on to tell me, there's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. And you're not getting one single drug from us, young lady. You need to feel those tremors and stuff. And, but let me tell you what these people did for me. And I will be forever grateful as long as I'm sober in this program. They got about 10 members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come and sit with me. And these people never left me day or night for 30 solid days. And I literally fell in love with these people. And I'll tell you why. There was nobody in my life the day I got sober. My family wanted nothing to do with me. They've been through it too many times. I'm going to go through it one more time. My mom, who I absolutely adored, had to be hospitalized because of me and put on tranquilizers. My mom did not deserve that by a long shot. And although my mom is dead, I have not forgotten it as I stand here this morning. I have to constantly make amends to that woman. And I think I can do that by being a good member of AA and so forth. But anyway, I literally fell in love with these people. And they'd say things like, Karen, just keep breathing. That's all you gotta do is breathe. And I'd say, when is this withdrawal gonna stop? And they said, when it's time, that's when it's gonna stop. And that wasn't good enough for me. I wanted a date is what I wanted. And they couldn't give me a date, and they were absolutely accurate about that. When it's time, it's time. And at 30 days of sobriety, I walked in that official treatment from that hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I had no opinion on one way or the other, but apparently I went to a fine one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's a lot of bad ones out there, you guys, let me tell you, and thank God I went to a good one. And let me tell you what I was like when I was 30 days sober. I needed you so desperately on day one, but 30 days later, it was a whole different ball game when you started telling me what to do and stuff. And, you know, when I went through treatment, a lot of people got kicked out of treatment for fraternizing. I didn't. Nobody wants to fraternize with an orange person, I can assure you. And, you know, they used to bring the patients over my hospital bed, and they'd say, look at her, see what's going to happen to you if you keep on drinking, look at her. And I thought, how dare you bring people in my room and say stuff like that? But you know what? In retrospect this morning, I'm glad they did it. It's the only thing I get to think about before I pick up any drink, I got to tell you. But anyway, I walked into group therapy the first time. There was 14 men in that group on there for drunk driving charges and stuff like that. I couldn't identify with these people. I'd done those things years prior to my alcoholism. And this one guy looked at me. He said, you think you're better than everybody else here, don't you? And I made a comment to this man that I was to pay for a long, long time in that treatment center, one I would not repeat from your podium this morning. As a direct result of that comment, I found myself in an inpatient 30-day program for 7 months, you guys. And that is a long time to be in an inpatient 30-day program. And I completed that inpatient program, and I went to an outpatient program, and I went to an evening care program, and I went to an aftercare program. And I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I wasn't doing one thing the way that you teach people in AA to do it. I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book, and you don't need a sponsor. We can do what we want to do around here. This is an individual program. And needless to say, I was not real popular with the old-timers in Lincoln, Nebraska. And you guys, the old-timers in AA are so precious to me as I stand here this morning, but not in 1982. I could have cared less than what these people thought. And you can pull your crap around here just for so long, and these old-timers are going to start nailing you one right after the other. God love the mean old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous. They at least saved my life, I got to tell you. And they are dying off right and left, I got to tell you guys. And they have taught me well. And I'll be internally grateful, I got to tell you. But this old guy with 29 years grabbed me of an AA meeting one day, and he said, come outside, I want to talk to you. He said, you stay away from the new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA they don't read the book and they don't need a sponsor? You're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. He said, you've been through 19 sponsors in this town, and we've had all the crap we're going to take off of you. There's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy. You're going to go up to this man's speaker and ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I'd heard all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. And I told this old timer, I said, who in the hell do you think you are that you're going to tell me he's going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go with this Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee you I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. And I paid that money back too, by the way. And I will tell you guys, it's from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that Clancy literally, and I mean literally, put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. My life has never been the same since that talk. And there's a reason for that. But the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying with another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in my life. I wouldn't have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. Trust me if I'd have asked him. And I found myself walking across that convention floor and asked that man to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazier than I ever thought of being. And I thought to myself, what did he say that to me for? He didn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact this old-timer called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked me if they brought me, if he would talk to me. He said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And he said, Karen, I don't like to sponsor people on long-distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you, because if I don't do it for you, I'm probably going to die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good, because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me today. I tell you not to call me every day. You are going to read that book. You're going to sponsor people. You're become an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me. You're not going to defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This is the day when my recovery really did begin in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said two words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. I do not tell people, yes, sir, trust me, I do not, and stuff. And one more time, God working in my life, doing for me what I can't do for myself, apparently. You know, respect's got to start for me somewhere. Might as well start with my sponsor, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA in the right way. One of my sponsors, a lot of women in that town. I'm not bragging about that. It is not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I grew to love those women very, very much, and I'll tell you why. They literally showed me the first 4 years of my sobriety, what to do and what not to do in this program, and every one of those women are still sober today, with the exception of one, and she died in a car accident when she was 13 years sober. But she died sober, you guys, and it wasn't because of me. They were active members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, I want you to get that nursing license back. I said, Clancy, I cannot go with that kind of humiliation. He said, are you arguing with me? And I said, no. He said, get up to the State Board of Nursing Nebraska, tell those people that you've been sober in AA for a year and a half, you'd like the opportunity to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's without a doubt the most important thing I can say in this room today. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not. And I went to ask them for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I got to assure you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, if you know the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process, too. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred 12 years ago, this last April, when one more time I was stripped in front of the State Board of Nursing Nebraska, and what they told me brought me my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home. You're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And that is a gift from AA. I do not deserve that, but I intend to take it. I can tell you that. And, you know, I went to Southern California to visit a couple times. I fell in love with Southern California AA and stuff, and I found myself telling my sponsor on the phone one day, I want to move out there. God, I want to live on that crazy Venice Beach with all those crazy people. I knew I'd feel like a glove, and I've been wrong about that either. I want to be on the Pacific Group. I want to work at UCLA in the operating room. I'll be on two of their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant teams. I want this and I want that. And every single one of those things have come true for me. And those are all gifts from AA. I don't deserve any of it, but I intend to take it. I can tell you that. And, you know, I've had about 10 people this morning ask me to tell my little bear story, and I'm going to do that before I sit down here and stuff. But, you know, early on, my sponsor, you guys, asked me, he said, Karen, where are you at with your spiritual program? And I said, I don't have a spiritual program. I don't believe in God. I can't do that kind of stuff. And he flipped open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he showed me where I get a daily reprieve contingent on a spiritual maintenance of the power greater than myself. He went on to tell me there's going to come a day when I can't help you, AA can't help you, and you have better well have a God in your life. You'd be dead from the disease of alcoholism. And I believe that as I stand here this morning, you guys, this has happened to me many, many times in my sobriety, and I found myself saying the magic words to my sponsor, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to get on your knees in the morning, I want you to get on your knees at night, and I want you to pray for God's will. Do not pray for things, pray for God's will and the power to carry that out, just like the step talks about. And I started doing that, and I didn't feel any connection with God. I felt like a fool doing it, if you wanted the truth. And this is when I still lived in Lincoln, and I call Clancy every day on the phone, and I tell him that it's not working for me. And he'd say, are you staying sober one day at a time in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, well, you know that I am. He said, that's the point of the whole thing. Are you stupid or what? I wasn't playing with a full deck when I arrived here. It took me a long, long time to get these little simple things. And my sponsors taught me, you guys, to do what's in front of me. And I said, do what's in front of me. He says, do what's in front of you. Do what God gives you to do. And I said, well, what the hell does that mean? He said, why don't you pick up the phone and answer it just for starters and stuff. And I didn't have a telephone when I got sober. And when I got one, I sure didn't want to talk to people on the other end. It was bill collectors, let me tell you. But, you know, I started answering that telephone and stuff. And amazing things started happening in my life as a result of it, I got to tell you. If you're new here today, you don't have to want to do anything. Just do it anyway, you know. But anyway, about 7 years ago, we had a terrible nursing crisis in Southern California. And we were working our butts off, let me tell you. And I was always the first one to complain about it, I'm sorry to say. And this one particular week, I'd worked 72 hours. And, you know, we're like, we're too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I was a bitch is what I was. But anyway, I'd worked the night shift over there in the operating room. And this one particular night I want to tell you about, I'd had the night off. And I went to a meeting earlier in the evening. I went home and I went to bed early. I was just whipped, you guys. And the phone rang about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, oh, great. You know, it's either one of the people I sponsor, it's my boss wanting me to come to work. And I didn't want to talk to either one of them, if you want to know the truth. But this little voice said to me, pick up the phone, somebody might be in trouble and stuff. And I did, and I'm so glad I did, you guys. The most precious thing happened to me and stuff. But anyway, sure enough, it was my boss, and she said, I've got 18 people sick over here tonight. I need your help. We're going to do a liver transplant on a little girl that's about 3 years old. I have nobody to do it. Now get over here and help me. I said, I have worked 72 hours. I am not coming over there. I can't even think straight. And she hung up on me is what she did. Well, you know what? My sponsors taught me to do what's in front of me. That was clearly in front of me. And I don't want to talk to him about nothing at 2 o'clock in the morning. I know what he'd have told me. Nobody ever died from lack of sleep, Karen. And I'd have to say, well, there's a first time for everything, Clancy. You know, but anyway. I just went to work, and I'm so glad that I did. You guys, the most precious thing happened to me. And I got over there, and I sent my orderly upstairs to bring our little patient down to surgery. And we had a jet coming from the East Coast to deliver for this child. We had some time to kill and stuff. And he called me in the back, and he said, "You're not going to believe all the people with this family." And I thought, well, that's nice if they had the support. I was so crabby, you guys. And he said, "Come out in front and get your patient." And I went out there, and the first thing I noticed was a mother. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I have ever seen before in my life. And the dad was good looking and stuff. And it was probably about 75, 80 people with this family. And I thought, how highly unusual at 4 o'clock in the morning. How highly unusual any time, day or night, if you want to know the truth. And I looked down at my little patient. And I got to tell you guys that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love at a level I never, ever, ever dreamt possible for myself. And I looked in the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life. And this little girl was so sick, she couldn't lift her head off the pillow. She was so sick and dying from some strange liver thing and needed a transplant. And I remember thinking to myself, and you didn't want to be here, you selfish person. You didn't want to be here. And I felt so bad at that particular moment. And I thought, by God, I'm going to be the best nurse I've ever been before in my life. And by God, I was too. And in her little arms, she had a little bear. And she had a blanket wrapped around that bear, hanging on to here for dear life and stuff. And I'd been over and I talked to her and I said, "Oh, you brought your little bear down to surgery," and tried to tell me her little bear was going to have a liver transplant. And I said, "Oh, you're both going to have one." And she said, no, just the bear, you know. But anyway, we sent the family out the waiting room, and that mom was in absolute hysterics, I got to tell you guys. And this little girl looked at me and she said, "Why is my mommy crying? Go tell my mommy not to cry. I can't stand it when my mommy cries." And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, what I've learned in this program, I was able to tell that little girl the truth. Said, "Your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so very, very much." And that seemed to settle her down and stuff. And we took her back to surgery. And, you know, we have an anesthesiologist at UCLA that loves to play with the kids. He is a delight to work with, let me tell you. And so when she got her IV started, the bear got an IV started. And his bag was called Bear Juice and stuff. And she thought that was real funny. And when she went to sleep, the bear went to sleep. And it was really quite painless for her, if you want the truth. And we put that little bear in a plastic bag. It was by her little head her entire surgery, you guys. And I must tell you, that 16-hour transplant did not go well. We almost lost that baby a couple times due to blood loss. I have never seen a team of people pull together like we pulled together for that baby that night. And 16 hours later, she went up to her room with not much hope at all, I got to tell you guys. And I became obsessed with this child, and I had to see her again. And we have a rule over there: you may not get involved with these transplant patients. They wonder where the organs come from. We cannot tell them. It's best not to see them after surgery. I don't tell anybody in this room here this morning that I'm real good at breaking rules now, aren't I? And I thought, I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing, and I'm not going to talk to anybody. When that kid was 6 days post-op from that transplant, I went up to her room, and I opened the door to that baby's room. And you guys, I could not believe what was in front of my face. My God, the power of God, the power of God. Here was this little baby girl. It was the first time she was in surgery. She was jumping up and down in her crib. She had a baby bottle in one hand. She had that bear in the other arm. And she put Band-Aids all over this bear. He had Band-Aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. And they had a whole room full of people in there. And I stood in that hall, and I just bawled like a baby, let me tell you. It is not cool to see the nursing staff bawl, I got to tell you guys. But something caught my eye out of the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book wasn't sitting on that kid's dresser. And it all made sense to me now. And I was in that room like a flash. And I said to the mother, I said, "Whose book is that?" And she said, "Well, that's my book. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So is my husband." Her sponsor was there. His sponsor was there. And those 75, 80 people had driven 500 miles to be with this family. They were not from the L.A. area. And one more time, you guys, I have never been so proud to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous as I was at that particular moment and stuff. And I asked the mom, I said, "How long have you been sober?" And she said, 5 years today. I thought, oh my God, her little girl, for the first time, what a fabulous birthday present and stuff. And I walked over to this baby, and she stopped dead in her tracks, and she looked at me, and she said, "Go away, I'm not sick anymore." No. I had my scrub clothes on, and it scared the hell out of her is what it did. And I said, "I didn't come up here to hurt you. I came up here to see how you're doing." And you guys, she gave me her little bear, and she said, "You take him home and take care of him. He's so sick, he needs a nurse to take care of him." And I know why she gave me the bear, to get me the hell away from her is why she gave it to me. But I can pretend like I want it and stuff, and I mean, like she wanted me to have it. And I told the mom, I said, "I can't take that bear. My God, that bear with his kid's liver transplant, you really need to keep his momentum." And she said, "Karen, please take it. She wants you to have it. She's got 50 bears in this room." And she did indeed have 50 bears in that room. And I felt like a fool walking down the hall with that bear, but that bear was my most prized possession in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for a long, long time. Then it got to be too important to me. When it gets to be too important, folks, we've got to get rid of it, let me tell you. And my little granddaughter said to me one day, she said, "Grandma, can I have that bear?" And I said, "It's Grandma's bear." I thought, oh, can't believe I talked to my grandbaby like that. And I said, "Brandy, it's Grandma's bear." I said, "I'll buy you 100 bears, you know, but please, you know." She said, "Please let me have him. I'll take. I don't want another bear. I want him." And I thought, damn, it got so bad for me I had to talk to my sponsor about it. What's a 50-year-old woman talking to her sponsor about a bear for? And yet my sponsor told me, I'm sorry to say, give it to her. You got the memory, for Christ's sakes. Let her have the bear, you know. And it sits in Lincoln, Nebraska on her dresser. And every year when I go home, she gets to tell me the whole story. She knows it pretty good, you guys really do. And tells all her little girlfriends, and they all sit around in a circle, and they all talk about this little girl and wonder how she's doing and stuff. It's just a precious thing for me to see, let me tell you. But, you know, the point I'm trying to make here is that I could have missed the whole damn thing if I hadn't picked up that telephone. How many times in my life have I missed stuff because I wouldn't do what God gave me to do, let me tell you. But, you know, the nurses got wind of all this. We got a cake for the mother. We celebrated her 5 years of sobriety. I got my sponsor on the telephone. I've never seen him so excited about any single thing before in my life. In about 3 hours, he had about 50 cars in front of UCLA. And I cannot begin to tell you how proud I was to take those people, my home group and Alcoholics Anonymous that night, the Pacific group. There's been no more contact with them. It's got to be that way for many, many reasons. But I know that little girl is doing very, very well and stuff. And, you know, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them. There are 12 traditions as long form, so that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, I may forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And there's more reasons than that for me. You're the ones that walked me when nobody else would walk with me. You held my hand when nobody else would hold my hand. And you told me that you loved me. And I need you as desperately today as I need you in 1982. You've taught me how to live. You've taught me how to love. You've taught me how to keep my pants up and all those things. And I don't do any of those things very well. But I'll tell you the one thing that I do with 200% absolute perfection, and that is this, that I love you more than the whole world. And it's truly a story from an alcoholic hell I cannot even describe. I have truly been given, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I have truly been given the keys to the kingdom. And I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to sit down here. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row, Nebraska, to where I stand in Cedar Rapids, Iowa this morning, and I think that but for the grace of God in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I would have missed it all. Thank you for having me, and thank you for my life.